It's now time for Sports Saturday.
Are you serious, really?
On 101.3, The Game.
I know football.
Sports Saturday is powered in part by Green City Garage, an environmentally responsible garage in South Burlington, working on all makes and models and specializing in your family's car, truck, or SUV. Vermont Engine Service, an engine and machine shop, 16 Krupp Drive in Williston. Vermont Mortgage Company, mortgage expertise dedicated to Vermonters. See how easy obtaining a mortgage can be. And Romanto's Pizza, delivering to a 10-mile radius of their Taft Corners, Williston location. This is Sports Saturday.
Yet another missed tackle.
Living the dream and taking you with us. 101.3, The Game.
Oh, we're living that dream and taking you with us. It's Sports Saturday here on 101.3 The Game and 101.3thegame.com. You can give us a call today to join our conversation at 802-655-6672. Or you can text us on the Town Fair Tire text line at the exact same number, 802-655-6672. Austin Danforth of the Free Press, good morning, my man.
It's Saturday again?
It is. It comes quickly, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You know? I mean, it's like you wake up Monday, next thing you know, it's Saturday. It's always very
Yesterday was Friday, I guess today is Saturday.
Yeah, here we go again. Hey, so big show ahead of us. We are about to get Eric Bolin of New York Newsday. He is live at Steinbrenner Field where the Yankees are actually the first spring training game of the season is actually today. It's going to be it's in Tampa. The Yankees have the Toronto Blue Jays coming in. We're going to talk Yankees with Eric in a couple minutes. And then a really cool interview, I think, at 10:20. We're going to talk to the head coach of Rice, the boys basketball team at Rice, the number one seeded team, Paul Pecor, about his team. Obviously a huge win, probably one of the best games of the season against South Burlington last night.
Oh, God, yeah. So, like, one, I hope Paul got some sleep, because I imagine everybody that left the gym last night was pretty jacked up. I was there for caught the second half, missed a crazy, you know, spurt where South Burlington took a 20-some point lead in the first half, hit seven threes in the first quarter, then Rice comes back, tied in the third quarter, goes down to the wire, and Rice wins at 86-84. Thing is, South Burlington has, like, two or three other games that are in the running for game of the year, as does Rice. I mean, just two of the teams that play some of the most exciting basketball in the state, and they were going at it with like Rice, I think, with that win last night, locked up the number one seed, which we can talk to Paul about what he thinks the D1 tournament's going to look like when it starts next week. But South Burlington is going to be right there, I think, as the four seed and somebody no one wants to play.
Well, let's get to the Green City Garage poll question right now. Green City Garage, located at 49B Commerce Ave, Unit 5 in South Burlington. Phone number 802-651-9299. Go see my buddy Chris Wallace at Green City Garage and tell him Sports Saturday sent you. Green City Garage poll question. You go to Twitter right now, 101.3 The Game at Twitter. The question today is, do you like the potential of the NFL expanding to a 14-team playoff? Yes or no? Let us know on Twitter at 101.3 The Game and let us know what you think. We'll talk about that later on. Aaron, do we have him on the line, buddy? See, you got to have a great leadoff hitter when you're doing the radio. You know what I mean? Like a great baseball team, you want to have a great leadoff hitter.
And yeah, so, get somebody on base.
Exactly. You want to start the game off right, and that's what we're doing on Sports Saturday this morning. So without any further ado, joining us on the TikTok Jewelers guest line, our good friend from New York Newsday, Yankee beat writer Eric Bolin. Good morning, Eric. What's happening?
Jeff, Austin, how are you guys doing this morning? I would say good morning from chilly Tampa, but I don't think anyone up there wants to hear about how it's 55 today and a little chilly.
Well, we got some sunshine, and it's, I think, 31 going on 32, so we got very little to complain about this as things here.
First of all, Eric, I saw your tweet this morning of the beautiful green grass at Steinbrenner Field. We have none of that. All we have is snow and dead-looking trees.
Everything's relative, Jeff.
Okay, fair enough. All right, Eric, I know you've got a big day ahead of you as the Yankees open up their spring training schedule against Toronto today, but it's been kind of an interesting start to the season, I think, for the Yankees on the injury side of things. Obviously, Aaron Judge came in with some shoulder stiffness or some small shoulder situations that the Yankees were dealing with, and then the news the other day of Severino's injury to his forearm. Can you give us an update on either of those players?
Well, with Judge, it looks like there's a little bit more positive news on that front, just from the standpoint that the first 3 days he didn't swing a bat and had not swung a bat in over 2 weeks. And then on Friday, he actually did some tee and toss work in the indoor cages. So he is hitting, and the expectation is that the next 2 or 3 days he should be caught up with the rest of his teammates to at least take batting practice outside. He's not, as of now, slated to play in any of the first, let's say, three spring games. But, you know, once he's outside taking full batting practice and doing all of the throwing work with the rest of the outfielders, you would imagine that's not too far behind. In regards to Luis Severino, it's a big mystery, really, at this point. He has that forearm soreness, which he's kind of felt on and off in the entire offseason, and actually dating to his start in Game 3 of the ALCS last year. But what's most perplexing for everyone involved, guys, is the fact that he only feels that discomfort, soreness, pain, however you want to describe it, and he's used all three of those words, when he throws his changeup. And he's always thrown his changeup the same way. So he's headed back to New York early next week, and they're going to put him through what Aaron Boone called a battery of tests, including doing another MRI. He's already had two that's come back negative, another CT scan. He's had one of those. That came back negative too, but they'll do another MRI. They'll do another CT scan. They'll do every other test under the sun and try to get a handle on what's exactly going on with Severino. But, you know, for the moment, he's shut down indefinitely.
When you talk about that injury and you say form, I guess I just think of, like, soft tissue injury. I feel like it's a muscle more than a joint. I mean, are we talking about a potential situation where we're having a joint or a tendon issue?
I've been doing this so long, I just don't speculate on injuries. I'll just tell you what they're telling us, is which they don't know. One of the things that Severino said was he's pretty certain that it's not an elbow, not a shoulder, and that it could be muscle. It was one of the things that he said yesterday, but that's way above my pay grade to say what it might be.
So, Eric, I'm curious. You mentioned it's a chilly morning down there, 55. I'm curious how you rank for yourself, you know, covering the Yankees, the different parts of the year, and what you like the most. Is the best part, you know, like getting to go to Florida in February, get out of the Northeast, and soak up some sun? Is it, you know, the playoff push? Is it the first couple? I'm just curious how you absorb the rhythms of covering the Yankees.
I mean, in all honesty, and this is, I'm entering my 12th year covering the Yankees, I kind of like it, and it sounds like a cop-out answer, but every part of the year presents something that I like, to be honest with you, and the obvious things that you mentioned with spring training, getting out. You know, I miss one or two nor'easters, it seems, every year. Usually the Northeast is going to get hit with one or two of those in the 7 weeks that I'm down here. So I certainly, having grown up in Cleveland and then lived in New York for almost 20 years now, I don't miss snowstorms. So it's nice to be in the nice weather for 6-7 weeks down here. But from a professional standpoint, it's just a little bit more laid back. And so you get to, see players in a little bit more relaxed setting. It's not completely relaxed because they obviously are preparing for the season and take all of those things seriously. But just in terms of club officials and people that you see on a day-to-day basis, including the players, it's just a little bit more relaxed setting down here in spring training. There's significantly less media daily than what you see during the regular season. So I find it just a benefit to be down here for that entire amount of time. And it does make a big difference when you cover a team and you're with them from early February, as opposed to picking them up, let's say, April 1st or right when the regular season starts. And then once the regular season starts, you know, I love to travel to every city that we go to. You know, I have a favorite bar or restaurant or place that I like to go. Not that you have a ton of free time when you're traveling, but, you know, I've been doing this long enough to where, I do have some favorite spots that I like to go to. And then obviously the playoff push and the playoffs themselves is a completely different thing. And the electricity that you get in the stadiums, whether it be Yankee Stadium or on the road, or once you get into the postseason, those are a lot of fun. So as I've said many, many times before, when people ask me about the job, it certainly beats working for a living. And I never lose sight of the fact, or at least I hope I don't lose sight of the fact, that I'm very, very lucky to get paid to do something like this, because I do love it. And I love, you know, pretty much all aspects of it, even you know, some of the things that can be annoying, early wake-up calls, et cetera, but that's just part of it, and you get used to it.
So, kids, if you're listening, it sounds like a really, really, really good job. You know what I mean? I mean, that sounds like the perfect job. I think you like everything. I don't think there's a part that you like less than others. I just think it's the perfect job for anybody that loves sports and loves baseball.
Yeah, I mean, look, it is work, and I think some people, you know, on the outside think you show up at the ballpark at 6:30 for a 7 o'clock game, and you put your feet up and eat a hot dog and drink a beer, and you know, it is actually a job. But I've had a 9-to-5 job when I was in college working and, you know, punching in, punching out, and I had one summer of that, and that was enough to teach me that I didn't want to do that. So, I never lose sight of the fact that I'm very, very lucky to be able to do this and have done it for, well, a longer time than I guess I'd like to admit.
What's changed about spring training in the last 12 years? Is it a bigger institution, less of an institution, more intense, less intense? I'm kind of curious how that works.
What do you mean in terms of the
attention?
From a media standpoint?
The way teams approach it, the way media approaches it?
I have to say, I mean, because I don't go back as far as some people do in the business where they started covering spring training, you know, the mid-'80s or late-'80s, early-'90s, anything like that. My first spring training was 2010. I started covering in 2009, but I picked up the team in April of 2009. But, I can't say I've seen drastic differences, maybe. You know, obviously a lot of media companies have gotten smaller or don't exist anymore. And that attrition has taken place on this beat the same way it has, you know, nationwide, really, with the media. I would say there's a little bit less media than you used to see for the first day of pitchers and catchers. I'll tell you, just I'm spitballing because I'm going off the top of my head here. The crowds for the workouts are not as big as they used to be. And actually a couple of reporters and I were talking about that the other day. You know, for the first full squad workout in the Jeter, Mariano, Pettit, Bernie Williams, you know, those days, you know, you would have on day one, first full squad workout, 2,000-3,000 people, you know, maybe even a little bit more at Steinbrenner Field. First day this year, and it's been like this for last 5 or 6 years, you know, maybe there are 1,000 people in the stands. So it seems like it's not quite the buzz that it used to be. But once the games start, like we see today, you know, it'll be a sellout or pretty close to a sellout. And once spring break kicks in and you know, this becomes a destination for much of the month of March, you know, I mean, I think it's pretty indistinguishable from past years. But that's just sort of off the top of the head some of the differences, which is, you know, like I said, it's not – I haven't seen many dramatic differences in the 12 years that I've been doing it from now, you know, from then till now, other than, like I said, maybe a little bit less media and not quite as much buzz on the part of fans, you know, for the workouts.
This is what I picture with. So Austin is a award-winning sports writer for the Burlington Free Press. This is what I picture if you two are hanging out at a restaurant or a bar, this conversation that I'm just kind of sitting in and watching here.
Apologies for talking shop.
So let me just get a couple points before we let you go because I know you got a busy day. But so I think one of the into stories that I haven't heard a lot about or maybe just in passing is where Miguel Andujar fits here. I mean, this is a guy that's supposed to be the next third baseman. We know the injury happened last year. Gio Urshela has an all-star type season. He ends up now, looks like he's the starting third baseman. I know that Voit has been the first baseman for a couple years now. People like Voit, but is there going to be a competition with Andujar and Voit there, or are we going to see him in the outfield a little bit?
Well, their plan is to play him at several different positions, and actually Andujar has been an on and off again presence since November at the Yankees minor league complex. He's one of the hardest workers on the team. He always has been since he signed, and when he was at the complex in November, they started having him take some balls in the outfield, take some balls at first base, in addition to third base, obviously, too. And that sort of continued the entire offseason and the first few days of camp. So expect to see him get time in left field and also at first base and as third base. But that is one of the interesting competitions, if you will. I fully expect him to be one of the 26 guys that makes the opening day roster. It's just a matter of in what capacity You know, he's not ready to see regular season games in the outfield or first base, but at the end of these 6 weeks, you know, he very well could be, because, like I said, he's one of the hardest workers on the team. He's been working on it in the off season, and he's a terrific athlete, and he's very smart. So you throw all of those things together, that's a good combination that would suggest he'll, you know, he'll be able to pick up on at least one of those positions, if not all of them. But the bat is too good not to try to find him a spot. So that, you know, that's going to be over the next 6 weeks one of the interesting facets, I think, of the spring training games. But he's really not considered in a competition for any of those jobs in terms of from a starting standpoint. Barring any kind of an injury, Voit's going to be the first baseman, and Gio Urshela at third. Brian Cashman said back in November that's his job to lose. So you'd have to have an injury or some combination of Urshela just looking beyond the scope terrible, and Duhar looking like Brooks Robinson for that to be a discussion. I would say if Urshela just has a healthy average spring, he's going to be the third baseman.
Eric, we got about 30 seconds left. Garrett Colbin, everything we've expected so far to see out of him?
Yeah, you know, I mean, what everyone talks about is his almost obsessive attention to detail, and you see him constantly, you know, talking to the catchers, talking to the hitters that he just faced in live batting practice. He wants to know what they were thinking about on a particular pitch, what a hitter might be susceptible on in terms of a pitch on a certain count. He was peppering Gleyber Torres about that the other day after a live BP session, and he's always watching what the other pitchers are doing and asking them questions too. So it just seems like he has an inexhaustible amount of attention to getting as much information as he could possibly get.
Eric Bolin, New York Newsday. Have a great day today. Have a great spring training. Get yourself a sweatshirt. I don't want you to get a cold.
You guys are too kind. I'll run inside it right away.
I'll talk to you next time, buddy. Thanks.
Thanks, guys. Have a good weekend.
All right.
You too.
Interesting points from spring training, but I have to tell you, that's what it must be like to be hanging out with big-time writers like you and Eric. I mean, having these conversations, you guys just probing each other for stuff. I love it.
Just figuring out what's different, figure out the lay of the land.
That's why you're an award-winning writer, and I'm just, you know, making pizza. You know what I mean? All right, take a quick break. When we come back, hey, high school basketball playoffs are like right around the corner.
Yeah.
And we've got the number one seeded Rice Memorial's head coach, Paul Pecor, right here when we get back. Don't go anywhere.
Phone lines are now open. Call 802-655-6672. This is Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
I don't care what Eric Bolin says. I really don't. You cannot tell me that the best part of his job is in spring training.
He gets 7 weeks.
7 weeks. I thought the same
thing. 7 weeks to be paid to be in a warmer place than he's supposed to be.
And not just that, like you're in a cool place. It's not like you're just in a warm place and you're put up in a building somewhere in Florida. You're hanging out in Tampa at Steinbrenner Field covering baseball for 7 weeks. I mean, I know, look, there's work to be done. You got to write your stories. You got to cover these guys. But I got to tell you, what a job that has got to be, especially when you get to go down. Because I am so fed up with winter around this time of year. Like, when they get to go down to spring training, like, that's when I'm done. Like, I'm all right after the holidays, I am done with winter. I need to get out of here. I just can't take it anymore. And these guys get to cover these baseball teams for 7 weeks, get to leave and get some nice weather. I'm telling you.
Well, so that is the thing. It is work. Like, if stuff gets, you know, goes squirrely down there, he's got to be the guy on top of it. Like, whether he's just had a full day of work and then something breaks and he's got to add another 4 or 5 hours to his day. That, like, I've been in that position. Not fun. But that's the position he'd be in New York anyway.
Sure.
So, why not skip a couple nor'easters and just, you know, work on the base coat tan? Like, where do I sign up for that?
It's like the perfect job. For a guy like me, and I'm a Yankee fan, or it doesn't matter who you're a fan of, just to be able to hang out at a ballpark for 7 weeks, covering a team, you know, and most of it, those guys at spring training, they're just playing catch, they're just stretching, they're just doing their thing. I mean, to me, that's just insane. It would be an awesome job to have.
Well, and like, I'd say even, it would be more torturous for me to do the same thing with, like, say, golf, because being around a golf course, ultimately, I just want to, like, go pick up someone's putter and just roll some putts and maybe hit a couple shots. But if you were covering the PGA Tour, for example, like, if you're out there, you know, with them week to week, and it's nice weather, and you're at a golf course, and it's spectacular, and you can't play, it's, so it's a... I'd much rather be at a ballpark doing that than the alternatives.
Well, let's get into some high school basketball here. And last night, I'm assuming you covered, because I was following you, covered the South Burlington Rice game last
night.
Yeah,
I wasn't planning to cover it full boat. I was working on some other stuff. And so I was following the first half on Twitter, showed up at halftime, and got treated to just a whale of a second half. I would say the best way to summarize the game is Rice star Michelle Diashimier went for 48 points, and the reaction was only 48. So I'm curious if Paul's reaction, we got the Rice coach Paul Picor on right now, if his reaction was, wait, Michelle only went for 48?
Well, joining us now on the TikTok Heroes guest line is what Austin just said, the head coach of Rice, Paul Picor. Good morning, coach.
Congrats on
a scintillating win last night in South Burlington.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Good morning. How are we doing? I didn't know I was following up Yankee baseball, though. I didn't think that was part of the deal.
We like to lead things up big when we talk to you. You know what I mean?
We can't talk about the Red Sox. We got to go to the Yankees already this morning. What is happening?
Well, listen, a game that you guys, you're trying to lock up number one. You did last night with the win and obviously came back in dramatic fashion after the tough first quarter. But you've got to be really proud of your guys and happy where you are right now, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, obviously the first goal was to, before the season started, to try to be in the top three seeds, because this year in Division One, the top three get a bye. So, like, that was our initial thing. And the importance of that bye is just, especially with my group, because we don't start as seniors, so we're young, is, you know, by this point in the year, everybody's really banged up. So that bye becomes really, really important. So, you know, it didn't necessarily matter 1, 2, or 3. Of course, you want one just for, you know, the purpose of being one. However, we just were really, you know, zeroing in on 1, 2, or 3 just so we have, you know, this week off and we can actually kind of rest guys, especially that guy that had 48 last night.
So, yeah, that was, I thought my favorite thing from last night was after the game, someone was like, he only had 48.
Yeah, didn't feel like it was like 60, but you know what, though, guys? You're not with him in practice every day. I feel like in practice it feels like 60 or 70 when we go through drills and we go through stuff. But, yeah, he's a pretty special player. There's no doubt about that.
Obviously you go in against South Burlington. You know they like to shoot it. You know they can shoot it. 27-9 after the first quarter. What's the playbook say at that point?
Well, I'll tell you this much. I wasn't exactly very pleased with my first time out and the fact that, you know, you're coming off a loss at Mount Mansfield up there. So it's one of those challenges of how does your group respond? Do you know what I mean? And, you know, South Burlington came out and they just hit shot after shot. I mean, a tip your cap to hell, you know, the shots that they hit. However, I wasn't exactly very pleased with our intensity, especially defensively. So that timeout wasn't exactly very pleasurable. However, then it turns into, all right, what are we going to do from here? And then that point is you got to be single digits by halftime. You know, you start making little goals within the game, and we did that. We ended up being down, I believe, 8 at the half, which is, you know, our big goal. And then, you know, you try to get closer to even at the end of the third quarter, which we did. And then, you know, all of a sudden, you meet those two goals. Now everything turns very positive. You know what I mean? About, we got this now. We're right back to where we need to be. You know what I mean? So it's like a game within the game is what you have to do when you start getting down those numbers. And the thing about my group is I know we're going to go on a run. I just don't know when that run's going to happen. You know what I mean? And you just don't want to go down too much, you know, obviously. So it was one of those, like, all right, stay the course. We're going to be okay. Let's just keep, you know, grinding through it.
So you guys have had a lot of close games this year. You know, South Burlington gave you two tough ones. Mount Mansfield gave you a tough one, then beat you. I'm curious because it seems like there's 5 or 6 teams, and I'd say probably you look at the top 5. You guys, CBU, St. Jay, South Burlington, Mount Mansfield. It seems like any of you could beat each other on a given night. It really doesn't matter. And actually, some matchups might work out better for people than others. How much are the matchups going to play into the next couple weeks in D1 boys basketball?
It's absolutely everything, and you nailed it. I mean, I don't know if I've ever seen it this open with a parity as far as any team could beat anybody on any night. You know what I mean? And you're absolutely right in the fact that, you know, it's all about matchups. It's about, you know, okay, how are we going to go against this group compared to this group? And it's kind of weird. You know, here we are sitting in a situation with one of the playoffs as the one seed, and I'm not even sure what our best defense is at this point. You know, it depends on that matchup, which is kind of interesting, right? Usually by this point in the year, you'd have it figured out. Okay, we're a great man-to-man team. Okay, wait a minute. We're a great, you know, 3-2 matchup team. Oh, wait, we're a good 1-3-1 team. And realistically, at this point, I'm not sure what our best defense is. You got to tell me who we're playing, and then we got to kind of figure it out from there. So that's interesting, right? I mean, in my 17 years of doing this thing, it's kind of, you know, this is one of those years where you just literally got to look at the matchup and try to figure out, you know, what's our best plan of attack.
Paul, I gotta ask you this question. First of all, you're fairly close. You're chasing the great Bernie Siplicki for most wins in race history. And I mean with all due respect, I have such respect for what Coach Siplicki meant to the community and what he meant at Rice, and that's a huge honor, you know, to get to this point of your career. It's gotta be, correct? I mean, you've gotta be feeling really good about things.
It really is, Coach, and thank you for mentioning that. Of course, absolutely, Bernie Sr. is where everything started, and just to be in the conversation with a name like that means everything to me. However, you know, realistically, and this is how I am, and hopefully my guys understand this as well, it's all about players. You know what I mean? It really is. And it's about, you know, assistant coaches that I've had. Derek Trono's been with me since, you know, the word go. You know, Harlan Sylvester is one of our big supporters, and the first thing he told me when I got the job is he says, Paul, I'm going to give you one bit of advice. Surround yourself with really good people. And that advice has kind of gone through all the way to where I am now. So it's not really Paul Pecor necessarily getting these wins by any means. It's about, you know, team, sure, individuals. It's about coaches that are with me along the way the entire time. And that's, you know, one of the reasons why Rice is such a special place. You know what I mean? Just because of how, you know, the consistency of guys that I've had.
And talk about what it takes to have a program be consistently successful like yours has been. I mean, one of the things that I think, you know, being around high school sports as long as I have, you know, I've seen a growth of, you know, your fan base and the school and the parents. You know, there's an expectation every year for success, right? I mean, there's a lot of pressure on you guys to come out every year and put a product on the floor that not necessarily can win a championship, because those are obviously very difficult to win, but to compete for one. I mean, and talk a little bit about what that, you know, the process of that. I mean, to make sure your staff's up on it, make sure you guys are developing your athletes the right way, because there is some pressure to continually be successful, right?
You're 100% correct, and to be honest with you, that's also the reason why we're there. We love that. You know, we know going in and you know, especially with like a group, and I'm going to talk about my group that we have currently, you know, with that we're so young, we're all, you know, we are all underclassmen that start, and it's hard because you're getting everybody's best punch, right? Everybody wants to beat Rice. When I played at Mount Mansfield, our big goal, let's beat Rice. I mean, that's the thing. That's what everybody wants to do. So, you know, and now I'm on the other side of it, of course, where you coach there, and that's what makes it so special, and that's what makes it so great, and the fact that you know you're going to get everybody's best punch. You understand that. So it builds that community feel that you just mentioned, and the fact that even the players know that, and that's one of the reasons why we have to be a close-knit group, because everybody wants to beat you. You know what I mean? So that's probably the number one biggest takeaway about coaching at Rice, is the fact that, you know, we're in it for that reason, and to be honest with you, we all love it, and we kind of thrive off that. You know, we got to be that family. We got to be together, because if we're not, we have no shot.
So I'm looking at the rankings here for D1, and this is the first year with sort of that smaller D1. I think it was 13 teams, and now it's going to be, I think, 12 with MAU not going to compete in the postseason because of their record.
That is unbelievable to me.
That MAU's not
that
there?
MAU is not going to be in the Division I playoffs. I mean, just the team through the 80s and early 90s was MAU, and to think where that program has gone to is just crazy. But that's a conversation for you and me, probably.
Yeah, that is a different day. But so I'm looking at this 12, and the smaller D1 means there's really no freebies like there may have been in past years, where teams that, you know, had sort of inflated, you know, VPA records or whatever. But I'm looking at your road right now, Paul.
And
your quarterfinal matchup will be the winner of hard as nails Burlington team or a Rutland team that I no one wants to coach against Mike Wood's teams.
So yeah,
you get that winner. Then if you get to Patrick, it's going to be in what you would say is the likelihood of the winner of Mount Mansfield against South Burlington.
Yeah, congratulations. That's a great road, right? Hey, you're the one to trust me. We've had these conversations over the last week and a half of going, how in the world is this going to play out? You know what I mean? And I'm going, there's no way this is our road. But, you know, again, you can't control that, you know, and I'm looking at the CBU road where they have Burton, I believe, against St. Albans, right? They got that winner.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sitting there going, oh, my gosh. And I'm not, you know, I'm not downplaying either program. It's just I know our history with BHS. And I know my history with Rutland, and I'm going, that's where I got to go. I got to go with those guys. So, yeah, trust me, we are. We understand the road. However, the biggest thing is we got this week off. You know what I mean? So I can't emphasize the importance of that, especially where we are right now, which actually I'm going to throw you guys a question. So we play today, believe it or not, in a makeup game against Spalding where our playoffs are already set. I had a guy score 48 last night. What do you do with him today? Do you play him? Do you not play him? This is, I think my thread of coaches started about 5:30 this morning of what are we doing with Michelle today? So what would you do there, Coach Paul? I'm anxious to hear your thoughts on that.
I have no comment on that. I'm not giving any advice.
I mean, that's the problem, right?
Exactly.
So now all of a sudden, you know, I don't think there's a win scenario in this. You know, you play him, and then all of a sudden something happens, and, you know, you look like that coach. Like, what were you thinking? However, you don't play him, then what are you doing? You know, then you're that coach for not playing him. You know what I mean? And he is banged up. I mean, Austin, you saw him take falls all night last night.
There was a lot of guys hitting the deck last night.
Yes, so I'm absolutely nervous about today. I got to figure this out. I'm going to call him after we hang up here, but that's the big question now. How banged up are you? You know, what do you do with that scenario?
That's why your name's at the top of the roster.
That's right, man. That's why you do your job, my friend. Well, listen, Coach, listen, I know you got a lot to get ready for tonight. Congrats on another great season, and good luck the rest of the way.
Guys, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Thanks. Love hearing your show. You guys do a great job. Thank you.
Thanks, buddy. Head coach of the Rice Memorial High School men's basketball team, Paul Pecor. Great interview with him. Unbelievable. And that team is special. And, you know, we didn't get to it, but, you know, it's got to make him feel so good when you look, you know, you put on television and there's, you know, one of his players being, you know, making a difference for the UVM men's basketball team. I mean, that just says a lot about his program.
Yeah, and a storyline to watch here in the next couple of weeks. I'm in the process of working on a story about Mount Mansfield coach Jeff Davis.
Yes.
It's his
another
last season.
Legend. Yes.
21 seasons. He's going to bow out. Stage left here after this season. They could have to, like, their likely quarterfinal game would be that juicy, as always, 4-5 matchup with South Burlington, a team they've already beaten. If they get through that, one of his best buddies, Paul Pecor, could be the guy he sees in Patrick Jim for the probably, I think, fourth or fifth time now, and could be that could be the end of the road, or it might not. Who knows? But that's a storyline people got to watch.
And I got to tell you, like, this is kind of what you're looking for in high school sports, especially locally. I mean, it's great to have parity. It's fun when you don't know. And you know what? Listen, no matter what the road is, you got to win the games in front of you. So that would be some matchup. Mount Mansfield and Rice would be a fun matchup to see, especially with what's happening with Coach Davis.
Those two guys, they were college roommates at Norwich. Everybody knows that. And they've been going at it, duking it out in the Metro. It's worth the price of admission just to watch them on the sidelines, just, you know, being so into it. And then usually the teams on the court do a pretty darn good job themselves of putting out a good product.
Legendary programs, legendary coaches, and there's a lot of those in the state of Vermont. People don't recognize that. All right, take a quick break. When we come back, we got some talk a little bit. We'll talk a little more baseball. You know, David Ortiz was fairly speaking his mind, I thought, this week. We'll get into that when we come back.
Getting you ready for game day. It's Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
I'm mad at this guy, the pitcher that came out talking about it, and let me tell you why. Oh, after you make your money, after you get your ring, you decide to talk about it? Why don't you talk about it in the season when it was going on? Why you didn't say, I don't want to be no part of, or now? So you look like a snitch. You know what I mean? Why you got to talk about it after? Why don't you, that's my problem, you know. Why nobody say anything while it was going on?
That's David Ortiz with his feelings on Mike Fiers, the pitcher that came forward and got this ball rolling on the cheating scandal with Houston. And I got to tell you, like, I am dumbfounded at David Ortiz's comment here, you know? And I can see where I can see why he's saying it. But I have no idea why he's saying it. You know, what is David Ortiz is the last guy that should be talking about this. I mean, I was reading an article this week in the New York Post about Mike Fiers has been getting death threats and, you know, with everything going on. And look, and here's David Ortiz, who I'm sure he knows this. And this is a guy that was just sitting in a coffee shop or in a bar or something in the Dominican Republic a year and a half ago. And somebody tries to basically execute him. In this restaurant, I mean, somebody shoots a gun, you know, hits him with a bullet. He almost loses his life, and he comes back here. And we know how the world works around. You know, I mean, with social media and the things people can say. I mean, there's a lot of great things about social media. You have the opportunity to do some things that you could never do when we were growing up. Now, but you know, you can communicate with your superstar friends, and you can make your political point or your athletic point with anybody in the whole world. But why David Ortiz would pick this to bring up and go after Fiers for something that to me. This is the worst scandal in baseball history is this. Because listen, boys, at the end of the day, all these guys care about are winning championships. That's it. I mean, I think Cal Ripken Jr. would have given up his Iron Man, all the games he played in a row, for one or two more championships. I promise you that. That's what these guys want. And what this guy Fiers did, you know, look, You don't like they did during the season when he was playing for Houston? Fine. But people are human beings. He's not going to go out in the middle of all that and destroy his team. That's not, I mean, we're human. We'd like to think that we'd make that right decision, but he made the decision to say it. It got out, and now we have a situation where, you know, we saw what happened with the Houston Astros. It's a good thing he did. But this is where Ortiz goes, boys? This is where he goes?
It is odd, because I think most baseball fans would rather he come out after the fact than not at all. Like, and it's a tough thing to do. Whistleblowing's hard.
And where's Ortiz? Ortiz, who's on that list back in 2000 and whatever with the steroid situation.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, look, if it looks like a fish and smells like a fish, it's probably a fish. And Major League Baseball has agendas.
Could be a frog.
Whatever. But at the end of the day, like, look, Dave, do anybody remember how David Ortiz got to Boston? What David Ortiz was before he got to Boston?
Mm-hmm.
When the Boston Red Sox signed David Ortiz, I believe it was it in 2004 or 2003?
03.
That was an afterthought pick. That was an afterthought signing. He hit a lot of home runs, struck out a lot for Minnesota. People thought that basically his game had a lot to do with, you know, playing it that's when they had the Metrodome. So he was an afterthought. He comes to Boston, he chums up with Manny Ramirez, and all of a sudden he becomes Big Poppy. Look, I'm not accusing anything, it just looks bad. His name was on the same list as Alex Rodriguez. It was on the same list as Mark McGwire. But Major League Baseball has agendas, and there is absolutely no way that Major League, they picked who they wanted to go after in terms of this steroid thing. Mm-hmm. They went after A-Rod. They went after Bonds. They went after McGwire. They went after Sosa. They didn't go after Ortiz. And why didn't they? You think it's because they just like him? No. They didn't go after Ortiz because the Red Sox winning the World Series in 2004 was one of the greatest accomplishments in baseball history. And how they did it. They beat the curse of the Bambino. They were the only baseball team ever to come back from a 3-0 series deficit. And who'd they do it against? The Yankees,
right,
who at that point everybody was just hated. They had won so many championships. Do you think the Red Sox, do you think Major League Baseball wanted to put that scarlet letter on the Boston Red Sox after 2004? Not happening.
What? So we'd also need to walk back without getting too far into the weeds with, sure, the Ortiz stuff from the last decade, you have to walk back the timeline. So the test was when, like, that list was produced, it was before 03 or 04, right? Was it 02 or 03?
I'm trying to remember when it was, to be honest. I just remember the list. But there was, yeah.
I think it was 105 names or 102 yeah, names or 110 names, something like that. That they were tested. It was supposed to always remain anonymous.
Right.
So, like, it was just to figure out
What was happening? What percentages were, right.
And so, like, those names should never have gotten out. Very, and it's true, not like a whistleblowing thing. That's like a breach of, you know, like an ethical breach,
yeah,
of contract.
Course.
So you kind of have to throw it. You can't unknow it, but you kind of have to throw it out.
I don't know if you agree with me or not, but what I'm saying to you is that David Ortiz talked going after somebody that was what you would deem as, you know, a snitch,
yeah,
letting out some type of thing like this, and is crazy to me. I mean, listen, do we remember?
He doesn't have the firmest ground to stand on.
He doesn't. And why are you doing it? Like, what's the point of doing it? Like, why are you using the word snitch? If you want to say, hey, you know what? I'm glad Fires did it, but it would have been nice to see him do it during that 2017 season when he got his money and got his ring. But at the end of the day, folks, we've talked about this on this show, is that these guys, there's so many millions and millions of dollars, and there's so much notoriety when you win a World Series and you win a championship. It changes your life. And these guys made poor decisions. We get that. But where's David Ortiz? He doesn't have any ground to stand on here. If that's the case, why wasn't he talking about Manny Ramirez when he was doing steroids? I mean, nobody...
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah.
And I use Gabe Kapler as a perfect example. Gabe Kapler was an up-and-coming star on Boston when they won their first championship. You know where Gabe Kapler went the year after he won the championship?
Was it Japan?
He went to Japan. A guy that could have played in any baseball team in the country, and he probably could have picked his salary with the role he played for Boston winning a championship, decides to take his talents to Japan. You know why? You wonder why he went to Japan?
Why?
Why do you think? I mean, that's the point. Look, it's unfortunate that this happened. It's unfortunate with the steroid issue, but it was a part of the game. But for David Ortiz to get on a pedestal and to make this point, to go after Fires for what he did, is completely wrong.
Yeah, I don't know what compelled him to feel like, ultimately, yeah, like there's a disconnect. And I think it gets back to what we've talked about what you've harped on in the past about how these guys, they get to this pinnacle of success and they kind of feel like they can't do anything wrong.
Yeah.
And so whether you don't have somebody in your corner saying, maybe you shouldn't talk about that like that. It just isn't there. And it's a bummer. Cause I think everybody, like, ultimately Big Poppy, your bigness, like, sure, he's a pretty likable dude. Maybe not for Yankees fans, but
it has nothing to do with Yankees fans.
By and large, as sure, far as stars go, he was a pretty likable face of the Red Sox.
Of course, he was the Red Sox. That's who you fell in love with.
Right. And so he you'd like to think he would know when to step out of stuff like that, but he doesn't.
Well, it's also not a good message for baseball because this is a guy did something really hard. He whistleblow on a team that he won a championship with. And that's never easy. So to send the message that, you did it at the wrong time, so therefore you should get ripped for it. What the next guy who has to whistleblow and didn't do it at the perfect time, you think he's going to like hearing this?
No, not at all.
655-6672 is the number to call if you want to join our conversation today, 802-655-6672, or you can text us on the Town Fair Tire text line, same number, 655-6672. It just boggles my mind, guys. It just really does. I mean, I look at a guy like David Ortiz, who literally his whole career, look, he's beloved. He's one of the biggest faces in baseball during his era. I mean, how his career ended up in Boston. I mean, the Red Sox were like the lovable losers until 2004, and I think they were like the antithesis of the Yankees, the corporate Yankees, mm-hmm, and the no shit, you know, got to shave Yankees and short haircut Yankees and prim and proper pinstripes. They were the antithesis of that.
Oh yeah, naked pull-ups, you know? And stuff,
yeah,
like that.
I mean, that's what the Red Sox were to baseball, and that's my point. So again, it's kind of hypocritical for David Ortiz, who was part of a team that was rampant with steroids. I'm not saying the Yankees weren't, because the Yankees were too. Jason Giambi, Alex Rodriguez, the list probably goes on there too. Andy Pettit, the list goes on there. I'm not saying that there are guys that there's players all over the world. But when you look at the list of guys that are ridiculed in baseball, Alex Rodriguez, Barry Bonds, Sammy Sosa, you know, Rafael Palmeiro, the guys that were like the figureheads of that era, David Ortiz isn't even mentioned. But David Ortiz was a part of this process.
Yeah, I think what differentiates Ortiz from those couple guys would be, one, like, A-Rod was caught after that.
Yeah,
That's so, like, he was caught. Bonds wasn't caught, but it was so obvious. And he was implicated with the Balco thing. So, like, there was really no dotted line. It was a line that just, that you didn't know who drew the line.
But the line was drawn a lot of this case because I don't think people went into Ortiz. I think it was Major League Baseball had an agenda that they had to clean it out. They got it, and they picked a handful of guys they were going to go after. They're going to go after the guys that were the most polarizing, not the guys that were the most loved. And David Ortiz was not going to fit the description of the type of guy that the Major League Baseball wanted to point at and say he's been doing it wrong.
Yeah.
Now, look, I don't know if David Ortiz had steroids, but I'm just as a fan, it just looks right. I mean, it's just there. It just is. And I don't care if he did or not. It was an era of baseball. Baseball's always been about getting an edge, whether it's right or wrong. I get all that. But my point is, for David Ortiz on this day to come out and make a point about Mike Fiers, and what I deem is much, much worse than Pete Rose's situation, much worse than the steroid situation, where they literally were cheating to get an advantage, and they won a world championship with it. Think about this as well.
Yeah.
There are organizations that are trying to follow the Houston Astro way to win a championship, and it turns out part of the process was cheating. I mean, think about that.
The special ingredient.
It's crazy. It's insane. I don't know.
I think what you're trying to say is, I guess it's sort of the pot calling the kettle black. But in this case, the pot doesn't seem to realize they're also the black.
Right.
It's a bad message. It's there's nothing good about this. He's a whistleblower. He did what needed to be done in this case, and the fact you can't nitpick the timing in this sort of situation.
I have to give Skip from Swanton just text us in the Town Fair Tire text line. I don't know. Do I sound like I'm on AM radio right now? My earphones make me sound like I feel like I'm on AM radio.
You do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, but he says maybe David Ortiz is protecting himself and other Red Sox from a future snitch on the Red Sox that might tell what they did bad and trying to put a scare into him.
Well, they're already being investigated.
Interesting perspective there, Skip. And, you might be right.
Like, it is fair to call that this Astros thing, and I'm glad we know about it, because I think we can all agree, it is the worst cheating scandal. It's the inverse of what the Black Sox did in 1919. Like, they threw it. They lost on purpose to make money. These guys cheated the entire sport.
It's unbelievable.
To get an advantage and win the championship and, you know, establish a legacy. The Washington Post had a great story this week about sort of like the way that the cheating scandal influenced what happened with the Nationals when they finally beat the Astros, and how the way the Astros swept the Cardinals and had all this downtime while the Yankees and Astros were duking it out. People were coming to the Nationals and saying, hey, there's something going on with the Astros. If you play them, be careful.
Interesting. That's awesome. We should find that. We got to get that writer on. I'd love to get him on the show. All right, we'll be right back.
Get ready, because you're about to hear some weird shit. This is Out in Left Field on 101.3 The Game.
All right, kiddo, what do we got today?
McDonald's newly released merchandise includes burger-scented candles. So,
boy.
McDonald's has launched a collection of burger-scented candles. Each candle is made to replicate the scent of the ingredients that make up the Quarter Pounder. 100% fresh beef, ketchup, pickle, cheese, onion, and sesame seed bun.
Nothing like an onion candle.
Ugh. I don't know, I'm kind of in on this. I kind of like this.
It's meant to celebrate the burger's 50th anniversary of being on the menu. The listing on the Fan Club website recommends burning all the scents at once for maximum deliciousness.
Yeah, I feel like I'm kind of in on all this.
I'm not. No, no way.
See, you didn't grow up in an Italian house like me, like where I'd go to my grandmother's house and I'd walk in and she'd be, you know, making sauce or making something with onions or cooking. And even though you'd walk out smelling like a hot Italian sub from your favorite sub shop, you still, you know what I mean?
I love the smell of a kitchen. I just don't want my kitchen to smell like a Big Mac.
Yeah, this isn't a bolognese candle. It's a Big Mac or a quarter pounder candle. They debuted the collection of Quarter Pounder scented candles as part of their Quarter Pounder Fan Club, a selection of merchandise crafted for the Quarter Pounder fans. Other items include a Quarter Pounder with Love Locket, couples Quarter Pounder mittens, 2020 Quarter Pounder calendars, and a Quarter Pounder Fan Club t-shirt.
I didn't realize a Quarter Pounder was such a big deal. I mean, I haven't had McDonald's.
I thought
the Big Mac was it. You know, two all beef patties, special sauce, lettuce, cheese, pickles, onions on a sesame seed candle. Done. Oh yeah, perfect.
I actually think a special sauce candle would be kind of nice.
You know what I wish that Yankee Candle would make is a candle that smells like a golf course. Like, you know what I mean? Like you're a big golfer. You get on the course for the first time in the morning, especially in the first couple times in the summer.
Yeah.
And that smell of the freshly cut grass. Why can't Yankee Candle come up with that? I haven't seen that at all.
You're not thinking of the month of May when the geese come through and there's goose droppings everywhere and you step in it? No, that's not part of that. Okay.
I'm thinking more of like the nice picture I'm picturing in my mind.
Like stagnant water when it rains too much.
No. I'm talking about the nice warm day, dew on the grass. They just mowed it. Or something like that. Maybe fresh cut grass, something like that.
3% like of the smell of like the grill and the clubhouse.
Whatever it is. Yeah. I'm telling you, it would be an awesome scent. I would buy a lot of those candles.
I want a fall day after it rained scented candle.
I think they make that though. I think you can find that.
I might have to go buy that.
You can find that stuff.
And I bet they have mowed grass. Like, I bet that's one.
No, they don't. I went to the Yankee Candle in Deerfield years ago. There's a Deerfield
mothership.
The mothership.
Which is an amazing place to go, actually.
It really is crazy. It's almost overwhelming. But at the end of the day, I said, hey, how about a golf course or like freshly mowed lawn?
Yeah.
Not the freshly mowed lawn in my backyard where all the dog do is, but I'm talking about the front yard. Like, I love that. Like, why don't we have a candle like that? And then he said, well, we don't make it.
So, another little fun fact for this story. On February 26th, McDonald's will be unveiling a Quarter Pounder monument for an unnamed city. So, it's a bronze statue.
You got to give McDonald's credit for this, their branding, man.
What a lucky city.
You
got to
give them credit.
I'm just imagining like you're walking down Church Street and a giant Quarter Pounder on a pedestal made out of bronze is just chilling.
Hey, people would come from all over to go look at that thing. It's brilliant. It's a brilliant idea.
You may think
it's stupid and goofy, but if I was in an area where they had that, I'd have to get a picture with it. Right?
Yeah.
If they put this in, say, doesn't matter where you say you're visiting New York City and they put it in Hoboken, I got to swing over to Hoboken and get my picture with the Quarter Pounder. I mean, that's the way it is. It's a brilliant marketing idea. I love it.
It feels like a Futurama skit to me. You know, like they have like all the weird branding jokes they
do.
Yeah, that's what it feels like.
All right. Now that I'm all hungry, do your sports update.
I'm hungry too, actually. That worked.
The high school coach and the high school reporter who comments on that coach. How do they do a show together? It's Sports Saturday with Jeff Paul and Austin Danforth on 101.3 The Game.
So I fully expect somebody to go after the Astros, and yet Rob Manfred said, I'm not going to be tolerant of that, so he's really going to be looking out for it. So now it's possible someone's going to get suspended for throwing at the Astros, and none of the Astros got suspended, and then Rob Manfred's going to have to talk about that again. Also, one of the Yankees told me today, in the end, the only way you're going to beat the Astros is to beat them on the field if you can't throw at them.
That's our good friend Tim Kirchen talking about what's going to happen with the Astros here. It sounds like there's a lot of players out there right now that are looking to, you know, to get some redemption against this team. And, you know, it's an interesting narrative that's being created here, Austin. And we are Sports Saturday here on 101.3 The Game. Feel free to give us a buzz, too. 802-655-6672 or text us on the Town Fair Tire text line. Same number, 802-655-6672. But the narrative now is, and it's coming, it's not just coming from Tim Kirchen, who's reporting this. Every player you listen to and talk to,
right,
is basically talking about they need to get hit. They need to get beaned. We want to go get them. Here's the problem. None of that matters. It doesn't matter what these guys think. It doesn't matter if they want to hit them. What they're creating for the Astros right now is the us against them, against the world mentality.
Yeah.
Like, at the end of the day, the Astros are still the 2017 world champions. They are still the American League champions from last year. They are still, nothing changes.
We can call them the America East champions,
America
too.
East, I think it seems like you were stumbling. I'm going to that next segment. But at the end of the day, nothing changes for them. So all these guys coming out and saying, "Oh, we're going to bean them, and they need to be repercussions, and we're going to take care of it." Like, what is it? It doesn't matter. And all we've painted now is baseball's a long season. We've talked about this. When the season gets going and they're booed everywhere else, it's going to be a rallying cry for their fans in Houston and all those players, because it's the fans that are just like, you know, they want their teams to win. All fans care about is winning.
Right.
If this was the Yankees, I'd be disappointed and mad. But all I'd want them to do is win. That's what fans want. And the Houston Astros, for the exception of the GM and the manager, there's no repercussion.
Yeah.
So what have we done here?
No accountability for anybody else in the organization.
Nothing. Nothing changes. So that's what Manfred's done.
Yeah.
Is not suspending any of these guys or taking away wins or whatever you think would deem whatever hurts Houston hasn't happened. And so all you have now is you've got a bunch of teams mad. You got a Yankee team mad. You got everybody's mad. But it means nothing. And you know what? The Astros don't care either. Those guys are so arrogant. They don't care either. What they've created is, on a different level, the late 80s, early 90s Detroit Pistons. Mm. They are the bad boys. They are Rick Mahorn. They are Bill Laimbeer. They are Dennis Rodman. They are Isaiah Thomas. That's who they are now. And their fan base is going to rally, and they're going to be a competitive team this year. They're going to challenge for a world championship, and nothing else happens. So what do we have here? We either have a situation where we have a commissioner that made the wrong decision, or we have a commissioner that's brilliantly created
the villain, the supervillain. Yeah.
So all of this problem we have with the quote unquote what I believe is a myth that nobody wants to watch baseball. Now the whole world wants to see how every single team matches up with this and how they respond to the Astros.
Yeah.
What it might be that.
That's Aaron. True, but you do still have to do something to make sure other teams aren't comfortable doing similar things. So I have a serious punishment and a joke punishment that I came up with from the Tim Kirchen sound. The serious punishment is you have a financial specialist calculate all of their revenue for their postseason wins over the years they were cheating, and that's the fine. And it would be a massive fine. It would be a financially crippling fine, and no team would ever want to have any part of a scandal like that again.
Mm-hmm.
The joke punishment is they have to, for a whole season, tell every player who comes up to bat what they're going to throw. And then they have to play a season watching other teams do the same thing they did to other teams.
What has to happen for this to be right, I think, in everybody's minds is the players had to be suspended for a serious amount of games.
Yeah.
or they have to take away X amount. They either have to take away the championship, which isn't going to happen. They had to suspend the players, or they have to literally say the Houston Astros start the season at 0-20 or something like that. Whatever it is,
right.
They have to that Houston Astros team has to walk on the field in Minute Maid Park, and that fan base. There has to be a reason for the fan base and the people tune out. People not want to come. I mean, that's what has to happen. Or you, that's the only way. The fining the organization. These are billion-dollar entities. What are you going to fine them? Like, what's the number? $100 million?
Okay,
$200 million?
They raise the price of every beer by exactly. A quarter. Every hot dog becomes 50 cents more expensive.
And if you're winning, they're going to still come. Like, you have that's the problem here.
So
you either have to strip the championship or you have to suspend these guys. And I got to tell you, based on how they've reacted, these players, like publicly, I mean, how Verlander dealt with this, how Altuve's dealt with this, mm-hmm. and there's more to come, I think. I mean, we're starting to hear about Altuve with the microphone
with the
after he hit
thing,
the home
yeah.
run, and now the thing that I heard this week was that he didn't want his shirt off. The excuse that I think Correa made
tattoo.
Was he had a tattoo that his wife was embarrassed on. Then there's a picture of him just not too long ago in the water somewhere, his shirt's off, and there's no tattoo. I mean, the point here
Invisible ink tattoo,
yeah,
guys.
Yeah, I mean, the point here is that what Manfred has created is, he's the most radical commissioner we've ever had. When you look at the rule
for
changes
sure.
we're looking at, and now how he's handled this, but the more you think about it, it might be a brilliant way to drive people to watch baseball games going forward this season.
Yeah, so that was what sort of occurred to me last week, was that and it's really cynical and really, really cuts at the spirit of the sport to not punish these guys based, like, it does feel like the only reason they could have punished him so lightly is because they want to juke the ratings and they want to make it so that they are relevant and people will tune in. And if Manfred's saying that they'll punish teams that and players that go after the Astros, like they're going to back them. Like then it makes anything that like it just magnifies and it like what you were saying, it just creates this spin cycle of relativity for the Astros and like the only reason you would want to do it would be to drive viewership, and that's so sad that it would come to that.
But do you think that's what the thought process is?
It can't be unmarried from that. Otherwise, they are just so misguided. Like it's either misguided. Or it's strategy.
Well, let me read a text here from Pat in Essex. He said, honestly, let's see how this plays out. And thanks for the text again, Pat. We appreciate it. Let's see how this plays out. It'd be interesting to see how Altuve and Bregman, et cetera, do when they do not know what's coming. Yeah, I mean, we know what happens when they don't know what's coming. Look at their splits when they're on the road to when they're at home. You know, and then we got an Andrew from Colchester again. Thanks for the text. He said, unfortunately, they can't suspend the players. It's against the law. However, the best thing to do would still be to strip the title. I'm not sure how it's against the law to suspend a player for cheating. You suspend players for doing steroids. You suspend these guys if you have proof that they have cheated. Like, that's my question. If they ripped Altuve's shirt off, if that's what the big thing is nowadays, is taking people's shirts off after you hit a game-winning hit, and there was a microphone there or something that he was, what would have happened then? I mean, would they have had to give the game to the Yankees, correct? Is that what happens there? What happens then? So my point is, if they're cheating,
it's the same as cork bat exploding,
yeah.
And it's like, oops.
Oops, you're suspended, right? I mean, you're suspended
yeah.
when that happens.
I think he's saying that he couldn't suspend them now because he already gave them immunity. I think the reason he gave them immunity
right.
in the first place is because he was afraid of the players' union, but I want someone to explain to me why the players' union would defend these morons.
Well, I don't think the players' union would. I think you'd have all the... Go to any Major League Baseball team's site right now, and when any of these players are asked about these guys, what are they saying? I mean, they look livid. It's just crazy to me to think that we're going to get back at them. We can't wait to see a pitcher throw it. I'm like, big deal.
It was the same. It is the same players' union that like covered the backs of the guys that were using the steroids. And also supported the pitchers that were getting victimized by the steroid users in the same at the same time.
Yeah.
So its moral standing is iffy at best.
But this is an even smaller group of guys. This is one team. It doesn't make any sense why they would defend. I mean, you've got like to your point. You've got all these angry players. Yu Darvish put a T-shirt over his chair at a recent press event that had a picture of the 2017 World Championship trophy in a garbage can. Like these guys are upset.
And that's the majority.
And I think the biggest problem that I see out of this, and now we're going down this wormhole of all these things, but what you've created now in Houston is, like I said earlier, is this us against the world mentality. And the truth is, when you listen to guys like Altuve and Bregman, I just use those two guys, and even Correa talk, and they're the faces, right? And Verlander, right. I haven't heard Verlander since when he did that, the commencement speech where he won an award. You know, these guys are playing out like, hey, we're trying to win a championship for Houston. We're sorry we did it, but. And now what you've created in a 162-game season is a team that everybody's going to hate, and they're going to be T-shirts made for these fans to be wearing, and the guys will be wearing them, us against the world. And as we go on, as the months go on, and people stop paying attention to it where it's not 24-hour news, that's going to be a rallying cry for this baseball team. And at the end of the day, they still have a chance to win a championship.
Yeah.
And I don't care about draft picks. I don't care about money. The only way you fix this is even if you just strip the title. What does that really do? You haven't hurt this organization going forward,
right?
And especially with how young they are and how talented they are. I mean, this is not the 99 or 2000 Yankees that were on the other end.
This core of this team is in its prime,
exactly. And so it just boggles my mind that this is the decision you make now. I apologize. And thanks for bringing that up, Aaron, that the immunity piece, it is against the law. They can't do anything now. But how do you give them immunity when you know it's there? And, you know, and was it Luke Roy that was just signed with Boston, the catcher?
Yeah.
And he mentioned that there was, they tried to bring this news to Major League Baseball before it even came through that Houston was doing this, and Major League Baseball did nothing. You know, so if I'm wrong, I apologize. It was something I read in passing. So, you know, don't kill me on that. But at the end of the day, with the decision they made with this is just wrong. Now, when it first happened, though, did you not think the manager got fired, the GM got fired? You know how, I mean, that was a big deal. I thought, okay, the message has been sent. It's over with. But then when you see the smugness of these guys, the way they've come out, the way it's been handled, you know, there's just so much more.
Yeah.
I mean, With the idea of having the clicker on them to know what's coming, if that comes out, does that take away their immunity? Does that take away the fact that, hey, there's more here? What the hell?
Yeah, it could.
They're not admitting that. They're just talking about the camera and the garbage can.
Right. No, that's a great point. And I think, you know, in my heart of hearts, I hope the MLB reassesses and comes up with an additional punishment before the season, because once the season starts, the horse is out in the pasture, and it's running around, and you can't bring it back in. Genie's, I think the better metaphor would be the genie out of the bottle. So you can't put him back in, and whatever you've created is gonna take root, and you're gonna have it on your hands.
Well, what else can you do at this point? If you don't, I mean, it really, there. What else are you gonna do? I mean, it's like you've made this bed, you got to lay in it now.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, like, and you mentioned earlier, I mean, what? I mean, there's always gonna be the next thing. You know what I mean? In baseball, we've talked about this. Baseball is a game of failure. If you get three hits every 10 at bats, you're going to be a Hall of Famer. So, I mean, you know, if you go 2 for 5 in a game, you've had a nice day.
Right.
So failure is part of it's most of the game. So anything that anybody can grab and grasp to get that big contract, to get that championship, you know, people, there's going to be something else. We talked about steroids. After steroids, it was something else. Now it's this. I mean, there's going to be bigger and badder, but if 15 or 20 years from now, we're talking about something else happening. It's right. A lot of that's good. It's not about this year or next year. It's going to be about 20, 25 years from now when the next thing happens. And they're going to go back to this Houston Astros team and say, yeah, the precedent was set. You might lose your manager. You might lose your GM. But, hey, we're still the 2017 champions, and I'm still playing this week.
Right. It does seem to set it up to be the Wild West. Like, the responsibility would be placed on so few for anything of this nature that, like, it really doesn't feel like a deterrent at all.
And it doesn't.
And, like, you think about it, so they were given immunity to talk, right? And which, that's stupid in the first place. You could have given them a lighter suspension to talk and a lifetime ban if they don't. That would have probably been more fitting for the caliber of cheating. But they didn't even say everything. It appears to be that you gave them immunity to talk and they didn't even fully squeal.
Well, it sounds like they did. I mean, it sounds like they're not coming out publicly and saying, I cheated. They're not doing that. But I think behind closed doors, they said, yes, this is what was happening. Even when the interview with Hinch that Verducci did a couple weeks ago, I mean, he didn't come out and say, this is what happened. He kind of went around. You had to kind of see what he was saying. You know, it was like he was being forthright with it. But I think with the way it's all played out, it's just blown up in Manfred's face. And I think at the end of the day, you look at what he's done to baseball. I mean, we've talked about the rules, which drive me bananas. I mean, this new rule coming out this year with the, you know, the pitcher's got to face at least three batters. That yeah. changes the dynamic of people's careers. That's not what baseball is. And why you got to be this drastic? So that's what gets me. It's like we're aggressive to the purity of what the game is, but we're not drastic with the purity of what the game rules are. And that's what's happening with this situation with cheating with the Houston Astros. It's all right in front of you. And you've got to do something to this team doesn't care. Billion-dollar entities don't care. They don't care about bad press. That's all. They don't care about that. They're billion-dollar entities. You want to hurt them? You got to do something to make their fan base mad. That's what has to happen.
You have to eliminate the ability they have to print money.
Period. And they didn't do that. They did not do that with Houston.
How much would it blow up in Manfred's face if this proposal for extra playoff teams goes through, and then one of those extra playoff teams this year is the Astros?
And then they go win?
what are you saying? Well, how about this? How about if they're the number one seed going? I mean, there's a realization here that the Houston Astros could end up being the best team in baseball going into the playoffs. This is a loaded roster.
Right.
They lost Garrett Cole, but they still have a great pitching staff. They got a great bullpen, and they have one of the best lineups in the game.
No, the reason I'm saying it's because the extra playoff team thing isn't popular. So if that wasn't popular, then the least popular team benefits from it.
Well, I think, I would be more mad if it was they were the number one seed or the number two seed and competing for another world championship.
Yeah, they shouldn't be able to compete.
I mean, you got to do something to this organization. They didn't do anything, but it's too late now. That's the bed they made. Anyway, all right, take a quick break. Let's talk about something good when we come back.
Okay.
How about those UVM Catamounts basketball, those basketball players, man? They're getting it done. Nice win at Stony Brook the other night.
Mm-hmm.
And they basically locked it up, right? They're the number one seed. Pretty much.
They got a share of the regular season championship. I think they would have to lose out to not get the number one seat.
So they're in the driver's seat.
They are buckled into the driver's seat, in gear, moving fast.
All right, we're going to break down the Cats when we get back. Don't go anywhere.
Bringing you another day closer to game day. It's Sports Saturday with Jeff Paul and Austin Danforth on 101.3 The Game.
Yeah, I mean, it was a great team win, like you said. Anthony was drawing three, four, you know, five guys every possession. I thought he did a great job of passing the ball, got us some wide open shots. You know, we didn't make them to start the second half. You know, missed a lot of clean ones. But then Everett Duncan made two or three late there. That was really important. Benny Shungu made one, and we found a way.
Good morning. It's Sports Saturday here on 101.3 The Game and 101.3thegame.com. 802-655-6672 is the number to call to join our conversation, or you can text us in the Town Fair Tire text line, which has been lighting up today. We appreciate that. 802-655-6672. That was UVM coach John Becker talking about his team's huge win on the road at Stony Brook. Pretty much, I mean, they are literally a game. I think their magic number is one
to lock it up.
We talked about that off the air here, but UVM, Austin, starting to show their dominance to me. I think they look like they're starting to grow up a little bit. Maybe not doing it the way we all expected them to do it this year. I think that we kind of expected this team to be the juggernaut that we expected them to be. But at the end of the day, they're doing it in a way that's more team-oriented, and that's been a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, I think you look at a team and you're like, okay, so they're going to start the season in one place. And they're going to get better, and they're going to go up, and you're going to think that line is going to be a pretty straight line. And this year hasn't been a straight line of success. It's been up and down and up and down. And lately, I mean, last 12 games, it's been trending up with a couple hiccups. I think you look back at the game at Maine, the game at Hartford, both narrow, dramatic wins. But other than that, like, they look like the team we thought they'd be. Definitely so in America East. Where they lost their first game and they've won the 12 since then. And I was telling you off air, like, you know, you think about this league and the only constant is Vermont. And then there's just sort of crazy stuff that happens everywhere else. And that it never really happens against Vermont, except maybe the 2018 championship game when UMBC upset them at home.
Yeah.
That might be the most shocking thing that's happened in the league in the last 4 or 5 years, in which Vermont has just flat out dominated, and with the occasional tough game, but that doesn't happen in college basketball. Only having the occasional tough game. The other night, Thursday, Stony Brook, you know, Vermont at Stony Brook, Vermont wins. They grind it out. They were down in stretches. They came back, went down again, pulled it out. In the rest of the league, the bottom ranked, the lower ranked teams won the other three games. You had New Hampshire beating Hartford by four. You had Binghamton beating Lowell by two. Sam Sessoms, the Binghamton star, who UVM held to 13 points, he exploded for 39 against Lowell. And then the other one, the other surprising game, UVM's usual nemesis, Albany, they lost badly at home to UMBC 69-50, which could be a scary thing for the Catamounts tonight with the Retrievers coming up the road to play them tonight. But you look at that, like UMBC started, like, they were ranked lower than Albany to start that game. Binghamton like was ranked lower than Lowell. New Hampshire was ranked lower than Hartford. Those teams, they just kind of like, they have bad nights. And UVM doesn't have bad nights and lose. It's crazy.
But you're seeing that all over the country. If you're looking at the ACC, the other night you watch a lower tier Clemson team beat Louisville. You know, if you watch
NC State beats Duke.
NC State beats Duke. Auburn loses to Georgia the other night. And Georgia was the bottom tier of the SEC. So this is an interesting year for college basketball. But let's just face it here, folks. Regardless of where UVM stands right now in the standings, it looks like they're going to be the number one seed, which is great, which means they're home throughout the America East tournament. Austin, they got to keep winning. I mean, they can't, this team, because yeah. I think there's aspirations here. And I'm not going to say national championship aspirations, but there's aspirations here to, you know, to compete in this tournament this year. And there's no reason to think that this Catamount team, with all the problems that they've had this year in terms of scoring, we know they can go through droughts. So I can only think of maybe one team in the country right now that I think is dominant. That might be Kansas. I think Kansas might be the best team in the country, but they're not a juggernaut that you think nobody can beat.
Right.
If there's ever a year that a school like Vermont could make a run to the maybe the second weekend of this tournament, it's this year. It really is.
It feels like it. And I think, you know, as uneven as the performance was at Stony Brook the other night, I thought, honestly, just watching the, you know, the intangible stuff, I thought it was really promising.
I totally agree with you.
The UVM didn't shoot the ball well. Like, not really at all. They created good looks, made a lot of the easy twos, missed some of them, created some good look threes that didn't go. A lot of them, you could say, actually. So you're kind of surprised about that. Like, if they get a few of those to go, it's not a game.
Well, I think play Becker 4 here. Play that. Go.
Hold on.
You don't have it ready? Okay.
I had to switch over to...
Okay, sorry. Yeah. You got him now?
I got it.
Okay, go ahead.
So we didn't play with Steph Smith tonight, who's been our second best player all year with foul trouble. Anthony, like we talked about, you know, didn't score a lot of points, did do a good job in the other areas of the game, but, you know, we're more than just Anthony Lamb. We're more than just Anthony Lamb and Steph Smith. And, you know, the other guys, the bench, have continued to play better, and that's been the difference. We got 10 guys that, you know, can help us.
They're getting production from 10 different guys in some form or another. You look at Anthony Lamb didn't have a great night, or what you people outside wouldn't have a great night. If you want to look at a reason why UVM can be UVM, it's because their best player doesn't have a good night, and he is as fired up as everybody leaving the court. I had a coach text me of a different sport saying that was his favorite thing of watching the game was how into it Anthony Lamb was, like, leaving the court, you know, after the win. And, like, you watch them play, and what was promising the other night, the ball wasn't going in the hoop. They never look flustered. They never lost their cool. They just kept playing. And that's sort of the difference between them and the rest of the league and a lot of college basketball teams, where they that strength, that defensive integrity they have, the belief in their defense, that, you know, everybody misses shots. It's about getting the other team to keep missing shots.
I totally agree with you. And when it was winning time, when it was crunch time late in that game, they made the shots to win. And I got to tell you,
they made the plays they had to. Yeah. Whether it's the shots or not, it's you know, Ben Shungu pulling down rebounds, the Robin Duncan play on the sideline where he just sort of becomes a one man trap, tips the ball away, and forces a turnover. Stuff like that they continuously get, like, from plays from guys off the bench, and like Becker said, doing it without. Are pretty inarguably your second best player, your second leading scorer, Steph Smith, who's basically the hottest 3-point shooter in the conference. I could look it up. I got the box score almost right here. But, like, if he played 13 minutes, I'd be shocked.
Well, and he did mention Anthony Lamb, and you said if you weren't watching the game, you think he didn't have a good game. But I think we're starting to see the maturity of Anthony Lamb. You know, we're starting to see a player that understands that, you know, earlier in the season, there was kind of that nervous feeling of Anthony may feel like he's got to put all this on his back. So the shot selection was poor. He just didn't look like Anthony Lamb. Now he looks like the player he was that you kind of expect him to be. He is a winner. And that's what I'm saying. Like, that's one of those guys that you look at and say, whatever it takes to win for this team, he's going to do. That's something you couldn't say early because I think they were trying to find themselves. And with all the expectation, the new bodies, what everyone's talking about, they're kids still. So, you know, there's that sense of I got to be Superman to keep this team afloat. Since Anthony Lamb has turned into the team player that I think he wants to be and not worrying about putting up points and trying to be the national player of the year, when he became the team player, we've seen him mature. This team's taken that next step, and that's what makes it exciting to be a Catamount.
Yeah, and like this, the team is getting better, and like, you know, it's like it's really hard to win a lot of games in a row. It means you're eliminating the margin for error for yourself and everybody else. That's hard to do. But the other night, Anthony Lamb, 3 points. Ben Chungu, oh, he'll just have a career high, 16 points, 9 rebounds, 4 assists. He looked like he was making up for not being able to play that first game against Stony Brook when they lost. You got Steph Smith. He managed to score 9 points in 21 minutes, more than I expected.
Yeah.
But just limited by foul trouble. You got Isaiah Powell, who wasn't really involved back then. He came in for nine points, a couple big threes there, which you don't necessarily look for out of his game. Ryan Davis, 9 points, 9 rebounds. Everett Duncan he was scoreless basically with 12 minutes to go. He finishes with 11 and all of them huge points. You can keep pointing to the roster and guys that step up and do stuff that if Steph Smith goes off or Anthony Lamb goes off, these games aren't even close.
And what's exciting to think about now is where we could end up now. Now, it's fun for us because we can do this. I know the coaches and players can't, but we can look forward. So let's just say, you know, they win the rest of their games. They go into this tournament, the number one seed. We know that's going to it looks like we're 99% sure that's going to happen. And now you run it and you win this America East Championship and you go to the tournament. We had Mike DeCourcy on our show a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
And we were talking about this with him. And Mike DeCourcy, if you don't know, he's with the Big Ten Network. He's a legendary college basketball writer for Sporting News. And he does this. He's a bracketology guy for the Big Ten Network and CBS Sports Network. And he came out the other day and he had UVMN as the 12th seed. I think Andy Katz or Lenardi just came out with one the other day that had them at the 13 or 12 seed. So there is still a lot to play for these Catamounts. And you got to figure if they play dominant basketball and just play gritty basketball like they have, that's an important thing. I mean, there's a real difference between being a 14, 15, or a 12 or a 13.
Oh, for sure. You know, you look, they got 3 regular season games to go, potentially 3.
All winnable.
All, yeah, definitely.
I'm sure they're big favorites.
It's home against UMBC, at Lowell, home against Albany. Then, you know, what would look like a 3-game tournament run. If they run the table, that's an 18-game winning streak they could take into the NCAA tournament. That's a hard thing to deny as the committee, although they probably will in some fashion. It's hard to deny that when it's a team you've known that's been there 2 of the last 3 years, that's as household a name as a backwater basketball team from a mid-major conference can be.
And has played a really good non-season schedule.
Yeah.
I mean, we're not talking about a team that played a bunch of nobodies. They played some really good teams leading up to the tournament.
Right, if you can't have a hiccup in your league, like in the regular season, and have that, like, held against you catastrophically, so like then I maybe we're getting into like there's an issue with college basketball, but let's hope that doesn't get to that point.
Well, let's face it. I mean, we had DeCourcy on 2 weeks ago. A lot has changed in 2 weeks, and he had them as a 12. That's after the loss to Stony Brook. So if there's going to be a loss in the league, it probably happened at the right time.
Yeah,
you feel like their first loss happening say in a week wouldn't benefit them like say a loss first game of the regular season will cost them. You know what I'm saying?
One more loss would definitely, I would say, kill their chances of a 12 seed.
Yeah, I agree.
Maybe if they lose one of the next 3, you know, sitting out guys or whatever, who knows?
You can't do it.
Well, no, you can't. But like, let's say something comes to pass where, you know, they lose one of the next 3. Then they're probably going to be lucky, but probably comfortable as a 13 seed, which is where the American East champ usually ends up if they're decent. So then we see what happens.
And that's decent. Nothing with 13 seed, 12 seed's good. I mean, 12 seed would be ideal, but 13 would be good. And if there's ever a year that they could make a run, like I said earlier, it's this year. I mean, I love college hoops, so I'm watching it all the time. All the major conferences are down. And even the team leaders. I mean, look at Duke play NC State. The Duke is so beatable. They don't play any defense. I'm so disappointed in Krzyzewski. I just am. I mean, and what he's become from what he was early in his career, like during the Leitner years and the Hurley years to what they are now, I'm just disappointed in how he coaches his team.
Yeah.
I'm disappointed in the brand of basketball they bring to the table. But you look at Kentucky, they're beatable. Look at the great teams. Kansas looks great. You're not going to sell me on Baylor. I'm sorry. Dayton is one of the top teams in the nation. I'm sorry. I mean, look, good for them, and I'm not saying that they can't go win a championship, but you know, you're not freaking out about the Dayton Flyers until it gets done. You know, this is the year where it's just, you know, you throw it up against the wall and see what happens. Who's to say that UVM, you know, gets a good matchup where they can, you know, a team that they match up well with, beat them, and next thing you know, you're rolling, you're in the next weekend, and then who knows?
Right, right.
And there's no reason to think it can't happen.
Yeah, with all the teams that have cycled in and out of the top 25 this year, it shows that teams have been very uneven, very inconsistent, and the best thing for UVM would be to find one of those teams that is somehow stuck around the top 25 or bounced out. And they've done that for a reason. You don't want to catch a hot team, that's for sure. One of those teams that had been in and out, sure, and then sort of sneaks in and climbs the rankings, yeah, because they make it their conference final or win the conference. But I think everybody in Catamount Country is feeling pretty good right now.
You got, with all the down stuff that was happening, Austin, early in the season when people were upset with this team, I think you got to feel like, okay, that, you know, the universe is aligned here now. They are exactly where they're supposed to be. And what are they, 21-6? So they're 21-6, right? 22-6.
22-6. That's insane. Winners of 12 straight.
It's crazy.
I also just looked up this year's tournament sites. It'd be pretty fun if the Catamounts end up in Albany. Let's just say that. That's one of the first and second round sites. I think it was the TU Center down there. That would feel like a pretty comfy landing spot for Los Gatos.
And you know that the fan base here travels. They will pack Albany.
Easy trip.
All right, we'll be right back.
You better crank up that AC because Sports Saturday is about to bring the heat. It's Hot or Not on 101.3 The Game.
All right, Aaron, what do we got today, pal?
All right, here we go. This is Hot or Not, brought to you by Superb Cupcakes in Williston. Stop by Superb Cupcakes in the Taft Corner Shopping Center in Williston for the best cupcakes around. They will not disappoint, offering over 100 flavors of regular and mini cupcakes made from scratch daily. There's no box mix over at Superb, so go and make your day superb.
Yeah, man, just do yourself a favor. You know, it looks like it's going to be a nice day today. Get in the car, go for a ride to Williston.
Treat yourself.
You know, give yourself, I'm just telling you, you'll thank us later.
All right. Kendrick Perkins, the former Celtic, had some words for Mr. Kyrie Irving, who is now the VP of the Players Union.
To me, it's the blind leading the blind. Kyrie has proven to all of us that he's not a leader. And I don't understand this for the life of me. Maybe he surprised the world and become this better person overnight. But when he was with the Celtics, he wasn't a good leader. And now he's in Brooklyn. We had several occasions where he didn't throw guys under the bus or whatever the case may be, saying that he don't need certain guys or he want this guy back. And it's just, I don't see those leadership skills in Kyrie. So hopefully he proves me wrong, because the Players Association has been moving forward in a great way. So hopefully he don't ruin it.
Kyrie is unfit as VP of the Players Association.
I mean, is the word unfit the right word? But should he be? No. I think that's a hot. I think it's a great take. I mean, how do you have a polarizing personality? A guy that has just proven that he's not a real leader.
Right.
Be in a position of leadership with all the, for the, it's a terrible precedent. I think it's a terrible move for the NBA.
Yeah, I completely agree. This hot that he's not fit for it. These are the jobs you like, or roles that you give to guys that, you know, bring people together, yeah, that are likable, yeah, are stable, like that, you know, you can depend on. And I don't think Kyrie checks.
He doesn't.
All of those boxes, if any.
It's not a star power position. It's a leadership position.
Right. Exactly.
All right. Yeah, no, I agree. I'm hot on that. I don't understand why you would make Kyrie the VP. It doesn't make sense to me. This next one doesn't make sense to me either. The 14-game playoff is good for football.
Hot. I'm all in. I mean, what? I'm a fan. I mean, listen, I don't get into the other pieces of it. As a fan, you want your team to be relevant. Football season is an incredible season if your team's successful and is in it. I'd be blunt. I mean, living in the Northeast and being a sports fan, you know, you spend your weekends. People spend their weekends around these games, spending money to watch games. I'm all in for this kind of thing. Now, Are there logistics that may not be great for the players? Maybe. That's fine. But as a fan, from a fan's perspective, I'm all in on this. I have no problem.
In the words of the great Katie Nolan, sending unfit teams to the playoffs, isn't that the NFC East job?
Oh, give us the smug face, Aaron. I don't.
What is unfit, though? I mean, listen, I mean, what is unfit in terms of, I mean, look, you are what your record says you are. If you're not a good team, you're not going to win. But the point is that as a fan, you're in this for a fandom. I guess what I'm saying is we look at this, when we get on the radio, we have all these talking heads that come on here and say, it's not good for X, Y, and Z, and it's not going to be good football. Listen, the NFL is full of or average football teams, and most of them are average. You know, you have teams that have you know, their schedules are conducive to better records. The point is, for fans, it's exciting for your team to be in the playoffs, whether you stink or not. So why? I mean, how are fans not going to enjoy this?
I'm going to come in at medium. I'm neither hot nor
oh,
not.
Come on.
I'm just so me. Like, okay, so what's 14 out of 32? We're closing in on like 38-39% of the league gets to make the playoffs. Like, I just don't. I think we get into what Aaron just said. Like, letting lesser teams into the playoffs, cool for the fans, but like not cool for like casual. Like, I don't need an extra week of the football season, frankly. I just don't need it.
Well, under the current system, we've already had years where 500 teams make the playoffs and play games that they have no business in.
I mean, to me, listen, guys, I mean, fair points. I mean, I get it. I see where you're coming from. But to me, the football fan just wants this team to be relevant. And you want games to mean something late in the year. It's fun when that happens. Of course, we're two Patriot fans over here. You don't know what it's like not to have that. But from a Giants fan perspective, or any other fan that's team hasn't been to the playoffs in a long time, and I'm not trying to dumb it down for them. I'm just saying at the end of the day, as a fan, you just want to be relevant. You want to be able to turn the TV on December 28th and have your team still fighting for a playoff. That's fun. That's entertainment. That's what it's about. And at the end of the day, to me, I think it's a great thing. And you know what? If you have a team that gets it, I mean, look at the NCAA basketball tournament. I mean, there are plenty of teams that can't win championships and are maybe average, but win their conference tournament and get in the tournament. That's exciting, right? I mean, we're not going to make it, you know, I'm not going to put everybody in, but the point being is the playoffs are the playoffs. And people love the game of football. To me, I think it'd be fun for the fans. It may not be great for the players and the purists out there, but I like it.
Fair enough. The Patriots should target wide receiver Taylor Gabriel, who just got released by the Bears.
I'm unfamiliar with Taylor Gabriel.
He's the speedster that Cleveland got undrafted. He went to Atlanta and lit it up for a couple seasons.
Okay.
He's a slot receiver. That's why I thought it was relevant.
Sure. If the numbers work out, sure. I more speed is good, right?
The only thing I'll say, his salary last year was $6 million.
That's gettable.
But it is more than Randall Cobb and Amari Cooper.
Amari Cooper is going to go for more this year, isn't he?
Yeah, he will.
Yeah.
His estimated value is $19 million a year.
Yeah, that's not really in the Patriots' ball wallet. If he's an option, I like it. Like, they need to diversify to some degree and give themselves some more weapons. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Patriots are an interesting study right now, right? Because right now there's no quarterback, and we don't know who's going to be under center. So it's like, is he the right fit? If it's Tom Brady under center, sure. I think it's a good pickup if you can get him for the price you want. And that's, again, you know, the salary cap and who's going to sign for what is one thing. But if Tom Brady's not the quarterback, what's the point? You know what I mean? I mean, the Patriots right now aren't complete. Until the quarterback's there and we know who's under center, I don't know about that.
Well, yeah. The way I'm envisioning it is if you can prove to Brady you can lock one of these guys up, then maybe he's more apt to stay.
But don't you think Brady wants to be able to, and I can't even see you now because I had to move this other microphone, but don't you think Brady's point here is he wants to be able to tell them,
right?
Like, he wants say in it. So it's not about who they sign before him. I think it's more about getting Brady done and then letting Brady, I think he wants to say in who he brings in. I don't think it's like, let's see what the Patriots did, I'm going
to
sign.
Yeah, right. Like, he wants to be a Patriot on his terms.
Right, but he wants to be the guy saying, that's my guy, I want my guy here, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Well, Tom Brady's got some guys out there. He's got Amari Cooper and Randall Cobb, both free agents who signed for less than Taylor Gabriel last year, or were paid less, that are both great route runners in Amari Cooper and Randall Cobb. Uh-huh. Danny Amendola is a free agent. He is on the older side, but he would probably sign for change.
Familiar with the system?
Yeah, I would be happy with that. Kendrick Bourne, the stud for the Niners, played for $550,000 last year.
He's probably due for a raise.
Yeah, and he's also a restricted free agent, so he can be matched. But yeah, I think if Brady could choose, he'd probably pick either Amari Cooper or Randall Cobb, because those are guys who create a lot of space.
Yeah, well, Amari Cooper hasn't proven that he can come up big in a big game. He gets lost in big games. I don't think that's the right fit.
You'd have to sign him for far less than he's worth in order for it to be a normal Patriot move.
Right. Yeah. Like, you'd have to get him to want to be on a winning team.
Randall Cobb's the guy I want, but Taylor Gabriel's if Edelman was faster, but a little less gritty.
Let's just see if Brady signs, then we'll worry about the wide receivers.
I just thought it was fun. I love talking wide
receivers. You just are in love with wide receivers and the New England Patriots.
I love wide receiver talk. It's my niche. All right, moving on. The Miracle on the Ice, which just hit its 50th anniversary.
40th. It's okay.
50th in 10 years. It's the greatest moment in American sports.
I got to tell you, I think it is. I think hot. I think with the way the world was at that time and the rivalry between the United States and Russia was very, very tense back then. What that team in the USSR represented and what they were compared to what the United States was. I mean, it's like it literally is a made for Hollywood movie. You know, we had Mike Ruzioni on the show a couple years ago, if you remember, and he had some interesting takes on that. But I got to say, yeah, I don't know. I can't think of another moment in American sports that brought people together like that game did.
Yeah.
And again, I was very young. I was like 5 years old, 4 years old at the time. But
yeah, like the geopolitics of it are like you can't untie them from that event.
But what other event can you would match everybody in the country being in it? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, everybody in the country together, like, just even if you don't like hockey, and even my family, we're not hockey guy, you know, family. Even my parents were actually there. They were outside actually during the game at my place. Wow. But I mean, like, everybody was so into it. It's got to be.
I think as far as, you know, American teams, like the national teams go. Yeah, that's it by far.
What do you think? The 2001 Patriots, maybe? Is that what you're probably thinking that?
Well,
the hard part really is that the national leagues that we play against other American teams, so it's not as uniting. So that, but as far as uniting America in the sports world, I would say the Miracle on Ice is the greatest moment. Personally, I have a lot of moments I would pick over it in terms of what I felt. Like,
give me one.
Michael completing the second three-peat is probably the one I would pick.
Like his shot just...
It's like one of the greatest things I've ever seen in my life, and I didn't even watch it live.
Listen, I love my Michael, you know that. But at the end of the day, what I'm saying is I mean... If you weren't a Bull fan and couldn't appreciate Michael, the other fan base could have cared less. We're talking about a situation where in the United States of America, there's probably five people that lived in this country at that point that were not engaged in that game and engaged in what it meant overall. To me, even people that didn't like hockey were into that. I mean, I think the beginning of when Marv Albert was comparing people didn't know the difference between a blue line and a clothesline, that was real. But all they cared about were those kids from the United States finding a way to beat these professionals from Russia. I think it's a great story.
I think everything about it wraps it up into the best sports story and in the best, you know, greatest moment in American sports history. I'm there on that. Like, yeah. I'm trying to think if there's anything that comes really close to it. I think if I wanted to be a prisoner of the moment, like, and employ some recency bias here, Tiger Woods winning the Masters last year was pretty cool. Damn cool.
Yep, that's cool.
Like, that's very neat. There isn't much like that we've gotten to see in a long time. You throw the geopolitical stakes, the, you know, pros versus amateurs thing.
And children, I mean, kids just out of college against
these. Or kids still in college, time off from college.
Right.
And then you layer on one of the most iconic calls in the history of sports broadcasting. That, like, it's perfect.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I just think it's got to be the greatest sports moment in American history. I just think it has to be.
Yeah, no, I'm as much as personally, I don't think it means as much to me. I will acknowledge that by far, probably the most meaningful to the people alive at that time who are Americans.
Yeah, I mean, it was just an unbelievable moment. Do you want to try to get this last one in, or are we going to break? What do you want to do?
We'll save that for next week.
All right, well, that's Hot or Not, folks. Good job. See, with these Hot or Nots, we've getting some good stuff going here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? All right, we'll take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to tie a bow on the show. Don't go anywhere.
I hate to say it, but the show is almost over.
But before we go, we'll get the Brass Monkeys bumping and get you ready for your sports weekend. This is Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
Great show today, guys, and thank you, listeners, for sending. We have so many texts coming in today with some of the conversations we had, so we appreciate that. It's been a great show. Hey, poll question today, the Green City Garage poll question. Green City Garage, located at 49B Commerce Ave, Unit 5 in South Burlington. Phone number 802-651-9299. Go see my buddy Chris Wallace. Let him take care of your car if there's a problem. Anything. If you have a question, give him a buzz. He's great, and tell him Sports Saturday sent you. The question today, and you could have gone to Twitter at 1013 The Game, and the question today was, do you like the potential of the NFL expanding to a 14-team playoff? Yes or no? What do we got? What are the totals today, buddy?
73% say no.
Why? What don't you like about it? What's your problem? Don't you want to watch? It's team's relevant. It'd be fun.
Wasn't it like 4 or 5 years ago that Carolina got in at 7-9?
So who cares? They got in.
If what we are dealing with, I'd say we could look at that and say the 73% are the Patriots fans who don't want an extra layer of the playoffs exactly. to go through, and the 27% are the Giants fans to think maybe if they add two more teams in each league, we can get in.
I'm telling you, that's what I'm saying. You're just so lucky. Like, you know what I mean? You guys are so spoiled in what you've seen the last 20 years.
Well, I think
years.
You have your own bias as a Giants fan.
What bias is that?
That this could help them get in?
Yeah, it has nothing to do with helping. I would love that opportunity, but they weren't getting in this year. But I think keeping teams relevant would be cool. Now, I don't know what that means for the players, but I think it'd be kind of neat. Hey, before we go, I just want to mention an amazing man passed this week. I had the opportunity to go to his funeral down in Rutland. Al Majeski was a former Major League Baseball player, played in the 50s. Just an unbelievable man. And if you had a chance to spend any time with him, like I did have some time during his end of his life. I met him kind of towards the end. He moved into the neighborhood where my mother and father live, and just an amazing man. I got to tell you, like, it really was. His generation was the greatest generation. I mean, he's one of those guys that checks all the boxes off in terms. He was a military. He was in World War II and was a hero in World War II and was a Major League Baseball player. In fact, he has a really wonderful story where he finally got called up by the New York Yankees. And he's on the bench, and he looks left and he looks right, and there's Mickey Mantle and Whitey Ford and Yogi Berra. And he was about to take off and become this Major League Baseball player, but then he met his wife, and he fell in love, and he decided to go a different way to be with her. Just an amazing story by an amazing man. And, you know, if you know anybody still that's around that's from this generation, the World War II generation, the greatest generation, make sure you take some time to talk to them. They've got some great stories, and Al will definitely be missed. So, Al Majeski, rest in peace. You were a wonderful man. Anyone that had a chance to get to know him was better because of it. So I want to make sure I made a comment about the great Al Majeski. Keep everything tuned right here, folks. Tonight we've got coverage here on 101.3 The Game, UMBC and UVM. Hey, listen, I know they're close to locking it up, but you got to keep winning. We want that high seed. Coverage starts right here at 6:30. We will be back next week for my man, Austin, right here, who's just the hardest working guy in Burlington Free Press, man. I'm just telling you. Guy's getting it done. My boy, Aaron, over here. Aaron Wells, way to go today. We'll be back next week. Have a great weekend, everybody, and we'll talk to you soon.